Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks. Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, flammables, fire, an album that bumps eternally. And today, we will be deep diving together into Rags to Rufus, the 1975 album by Rufus and Chaka Khan.
I got the right street, but the wrong direction. Help me find a way to your affection. I'm on the right train, but the wrong.
I'm dropping in the following tidbit for those not familiar with neither the term nor the album Rags to Rufus. According to the Urban Dictionary, stank face is a human facial expression identified by a flaring of the nostrils and raising of the upper lip, which is caused by 70s-influenced funk bass playing. Familiarize yourself with this, so that what happens to you at the beginning of the album, the opening of You Got the Love, doesn't catch you unawares. It's impossible not to react. The slick, sensual, sly way she sings Love Me Right. Moments after, that extra funkified, funky bass that commands your attention and then some. It's like that with Chaka. After all, she is the queen of funk. And there's always a song to remind you of that. Despite her declaration to the contrary, she's not really every woman. Every woman doesn't have that gift, that range, that way of singing about complicated relationships, that way of wrapping herself in arrangements, any genre, and ad-libbing or scatting or humming beyond what you thought. Rags to Rufus was platinum, Grammy-winning, six-penned, and a study in Chaka's abilities and the strength of her band. Socrates said, "Through your rags, I see your vanity." I like that, actually. I would say, through Rags to Rufus, you see ability, synchronicity, possibility, autonomy. She has leads and backgrounds covered. She's got slow-burned soul and adapted country covered. She's got Negro spirituals covered. She's got 1974 covered, releasing this and Rufusized in the same year. She's got big hair and big voice covered. And we hadn't seen anything yet. Not from her, not from Rufus. There was platinum in their future and hers. Can't nobody, ain't nobody like Chaka Khan.
Told me that our love would last forever. You would always be here by my side. But you found somebody.
Rags to Rufus was the album pick of our guest today, singer and songwriter Jametta Rose. For the past 15-plus years, this L.A. native has been at the vanguard of the city's underground soul movement, dropping heat rocks like 2007's America, her lauded 2010 debut album, The Barber's Daughter, and 2016's equally celebrated follow-up, The Light Bearer. Along the way, Rose has been a consummate collaborator, working with such contemporaries as Georgia Ann Muldrow, Kamasi Washington, and Shafiq Hussein, to say nothing of OGs like Michelle Ndegeocello, Talib Kweli, and Erykah Badu. Other artists go out and get themselves a band, but Rose went out and, along with Jack Maybe, put together a choir, the Voices of Creation. Great name, by the way.
Thanks.
Jametta Rose, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Hey, what's up, you guys and gals? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now, I have to ask, as we do around this time, what was your introduction to Chaka Khan, or to Rufus and Chaka Khan? And also, what was your introduction to this album?
I mean, I don't remember not having soul music playing. I remember my mom thinking Chaka was raunchy a little bit. And my mom was like super Christian, and we went to church every Sunday. But I liked Chaka. I liked, she was fun, and she had a voice. You know, she had a voice that reminded me of how I felt like I sounded. And so I wanted to find more of her music because I wanted to hear more ways of using of that voice having arrangements. And, you know, I loved her arrangements. They sounded like church arrangements to me, but with jazz knowledgeability. And I'm like, you know, being raised in church, I was gravitating to that three-part harmony, but like, hi, if you know gospel, you know the Clark sisters, like Chaka made her harmonies like them. Like, it's three-part, but everybody's might be first first and second sopranos. And like for me, that's how I heard music. And so I'm like, oh, I need to find more of this. And so of course I heard like Tell Me Something Good coming up. People would always ask me to sing Sweet Thing because I had a big voice. And I never was a singer that liked singing cover songs so much because the magic is there. And that's why people are emulating it over and over again. But if you can't add more magic or if you can't interpret it a different way, really no reason to sing it. It's like just sing along or just listen. And so, you know, coming up, I would be asked to sing Sweet Thing for the most part. Sweet Thing was just like, I will love you. Oh, sing this. And I'm just like, yeah, yeah. I mean, I hear the similarities in the voice, but like no, like, because ultimately I was still young and it was mature subject matter, you know, so I didn't resonate with the stuff. I wasn't trying to sing it. And so one day I hear I Know You, I Live You. And by that time I was about 17 to 19 years old when I heard that, because I was familiar with Shaka, I thought, you know, because we know all the hits. And then I heard that song one day and I'm like, that sounds like Shaka Khan. I went up to the DJ and I asked who it was, and he said, oh, this is Rufus and Shaka Khan. I said, Rufus and Shaka Khan, because I had never even heard of Rufus before that moment.
Sure.
You know, just Shaka, everything. So I go on a search for that song. So I buy lots of Rufus records, and this one just happened to be the first one I bought because it looked like the oldest. It was a jean pocket on the front. They were running down the bridge on the back. It looked fun. And I was like, I just know that song has to be on here because that song feels like this. So I bought the record, got home, and I played it, and I looked for the song. So first I played it and didn't give none of the songs any listens because I'm looking for that song.
Right,
so
right,
I'm looking
right.
for the bass line. I'm looking for something because I'm like, maybe I'm transposing the name wrong because I'm like, the name is it I Know You, I Live You. It's I Know You, I Love You. I'm like, maybe they did a poetic name. I'm like, it's on this record, you know. I'm going to find this. And sure enough, it wasn't. But through listening through, like, the beginning of them all, I'm like, okay, well, dang, my song not on here. I'm going to have to go back to Amoeba and try to find this CD again. But, okay, I got this record that I've never heard, though. So I start listening, and I found the more known songs, but the songs that really stuck out were the I Got the Right Street, and then my favorite song, which I'll wait because it's later in the track listing, but
yeah.
My favorite song on the record ended up being the most obscure song and the most unlike the record looks, even. You know, it's not fun, it's not anything, but I went on to find I Know You, I Live You and ended up covering it with my band. And I love that song.
Sure.
But that song led me to finding out about Rufus, to finding out about that aspect of Shaka's career, and seeing how it so greatly paralleled a lot of the things within my own career of before you go on to your solo journey. Doing these, it's almost like workshop working because, you know, yeah, you're all working on this idea, but Shaka, at some point, she separated from this idea. And I feel like what's sad to me about that is that the music I really love of Shaka, it really comes from this time.
Sure.
And I Know You, I Live You was on her first record after leaving them, but it was the first record. And as she continued to progressively go away from that sound, as an artist and as a singer, if you're not solid on your sound, there's so many ways that you can be produced. There's so many ways that you can be embellished with sound that your voice doesn't become the statement. And I think at that time, Shaka's voice is always going to be the statement. Luckily for her, God bless, you know,
yeah.
She doesn't have to, whatever their color in the background with. And that's why we know her and she's a legend. Can you truly say that you're happy? The Rufus sound, though, to me was just the perfect embellishment and like capture of Chaka.
I do love the kind of the accident in terms of finding the album, not because you thought it was a different one. And as someone who buys a lot of music, I think it's the albums that you discover when you didn't realize that you were looking for and you find are is somehow more satisfying than finding the ones that you actually are looking for.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I had a similar situation from a song that I heard of Chaka's in my homegirl's car. And it took me a long time to find that song. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're listening to me right now, it's just so janky that you didn't want to let me borrow that cassette tape. I'm talking to you, Robin.
If you're tuned in, girl.
If you're tuned into this, because I asked her.
The tea is hot in here right now.
Amen. I was just like, all I want to do is just copy it. You know what I'm saying? But she wouldn't let me borrow it. She didn't trust me.
She was
whatever.
Respecting copyright.
Wow.
Oh, no. But and I found it on an album called Chaka.
Yeah.
The song is called So Not to Worry. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty. So as we know, Chaka is the patron saint of complicated relationships. Mm. And she sings about him so pretty that you find yourself during the song being like, well, hell, should I have stayed?
Yeah.
Because she just has that way of wrapping herself around something complicated. And So Not to Worry is about a relationship that you're not supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. But I like her emotional IQ even as a young singer. Mm-hmm. I like you mentioning that people thought she was raunchy because mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason that I didn't hear her in the house either. Mm-hmm. She just wasn't on heavy rotation.
Yeah. And I mean, she was like very scantily clad.
She was.
She was singing, ha, ha, you know, like yeah. really, you know, it was not.
and yet,
it was funk.
Sure.
You know what I'm
it
saying?
It was funk. And yeah. I think we forget that she has been called the queen of funk.
Yeah.
And behind what made her probably seem raunchy to me was the funk. She wasn't exactly Millie Jackson out here.
Yeah, no. I was going to say, on the spectrum, she could
be raunchier. You know what I'm saying? She could go that way. But I think it was just her comfort with her sensuality and her sexuality. Mm-hmm. By the time she gets to Love Me Right, the way she sings Love Me Right at the beginning of the opening of the album, mm-hmm. You Got the Love, it's just the way that she draws it out.
Right. What's the matter with you? Hold me tight.
And it's very, I think it's body comfort. I think it's comfort with her sexuality. And I think that made women in 1975 very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Chaka was like, whatever, big hair. I'm still singing this. I'm still singing the heck out of this. And I got my band to back me up. And Ray Parker Jr. wrote this and it's going platinum. And who knew Ray Parker Jr.? Mm-hmm. Shout out to Ray Parker Jr.
No, seriously. I think because his best known hit is the Ghostbusters theme, we kind of have reduced him to being a one-hit wonder, but if you look at that man's discography, what he's played on as influential a bassist that we've ever had, you know, since the 70s, like that dude has seen some stuff.
I wasn't knowing.
Yeah.
I want to have dinner with Gershwin. I want to watch Rembrandt sketch. I want to talk theory with Curie.
Honey, I'll always love you. I promise to always love you.
Yeah, I mean, he's cashing a lot of checks, not just for Ghostbusters. Let's just put it that way. He's doing fine. Because he's got credits everywhere.
What I see in your eyes, you got the love. Give me the strength to keep on living. Yeah.
In listening to this, and a couple things I need to just put out there right at the front end. Number one, I never listened to Rags to Rufus from beginning to end. And even more so, and Morgan, you often say that confession is good for the soul.
It
so
is.
Here's my confession.
All right.
Until this week, I did not realize that there's no one named Rufus in Rufus. Okay.
It's all right. It's all good.
Okay.
It's all good.
No, I mentioned this to my wife, and she was giving me a really hard time about it. I'm like, look, I just thought it was like Rufus, someone named Rufus who had a band named after himself
right.
that also had Jacques Kahn. It's like, no, Rufus is just the name of the band.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there's no one actually named Rufus in it. So you can, this tells you like how deeply familiar I was with this era of Chaka Khan and Rufus. But in any case, listening to this, the first thing that really came to mind was it was like a Bette Davis album. If you took
sure.
Betty, who of course we all know, we love Betty, she's fantastic. But if you took her and you upgraded her vocal abilities to like the level of a Chaka Khan,
sure.
like you would kind of end up with this album.
Sure.
Because it has, you know, it has the funk.
Yep.
It has some jazzy stuff. It has some, you know, just straight up, you know, great mid-70s style R&B on it. It has blues elements. That mixture to me really reminds me of the kind of stuff that Betty was working with, and the kind of chops that Betty's players had in those first couple albums are not that dissimilar from the kind of, you know, interracial rock meets soul sound that a group like Rufus was putting together.
I agree wholeheartedly. And if you thought that the band wasn't tight like that, the title song lets you know.
Oh, yeah.
We are tight like this.
Yeah.
And we're going to spend a whole song just to let you know. We ain't going to even have Chaka sing. We're just going to play out.
Right. Yeah. What I liked about this, and I didn't expect to hear an instrumental on here, is that, you know, in other parts of the album, the group reminds me a lot of like Earth, Wind, and Fire and Tower
sure.
Power, because same era, right? And I'm sure all these groups are influencing each other. But this one just had, especially because with the jazz guitar, it just is a different element and doesn't sound like an Earth, Wind, and Fire
right.
song in that sense. So,
right.
Yeah.
Super duper funky and... For that song in particular, I didn't find myself being like, when is Chaka going to sing?
Yeah.
I grooved out with them. But to your point, I just didn't expect an instrumental smackdown dab in the middle of the album, and certainly not the title track.
Yeah. We are, of course, going to talk, I think, a lot more about Chaka Khan, but let's kind of try to give Rufus their due a little bit more here, because I think what's fascinating about this album in particular is that if you looked at, this was the second album that they recorded with Chaka, but on the previous one, the group was just called Rufus. And on this album, including on that jean pocket cover, it says Rufus, and then there's a button on the jean pocket that says featuring Chaka Khan. If
mm-hmm.
you look at the liner notes, the name of the group has now become Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
What happened?
Well, that, if I'm not mistaken, that was the record label saying, you need to make her more prominent because she's the star of your group. And I think this was news to everyone in the group. Maybe Chaka knew that she was a star.
Sure.
But everyone else in the group is like, listen, she just joined a couple years ago to play percussion with us.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And now you want us to give her equal billing. And I know this created tension within the group because this is kind of well known. But this is like that transitional album where Chaka has gone from being the side player and getting to sing on a few songs to like, no, Chaka Khan is now like the centerpiece
right.
of your group. So we'll come back to Chaka, but let's talk a little bit more about Rufus. How many of you had heard the previous iteration of Rufus when they were still called American Breed back in the late 60s?
I hadn't.
Well, here's the thing. I had heard of American Breed and didn't know that that was Rufus.
Yeah. It's really hard to reconcile the sound that you hear on this album, right, from 1975, with what it was American Breed's biggest hit from 1968, Bend Me, Shape Me. I mean, that is like late 60s in a nutshell right there.
Absolutely. And what year was this?
1968.
Okay.
And then you just fast forward 7 years, and now they're doing just straight up, again, like EWF, Tower mm-hmm. Power style funk. I mean, really fascinating transformation, I think, for this group.
Sure. For that first song sounds like, wasn't nobody black in the group?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, recruit some members? But I will say that their lyrics were still, they were still, bend me, shape me any way you want me, you know, that... That didn't sound like the Beatles, that's for sure. You know?
No. More Stones.
Yeah.
More Stones.
Yeah. They were coming through with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Start Me Up.
They
you know
were
what I mean?
On their way to the funk, okay?
But they needed somebody black to get them there.
They stuck a pinky toe in and invited
Listen,
Charles in.
That's just what happened.
What's the black member name? We got to shout them out.
They're going to hear this and they're going to be like, wow.
Like, that's not what happened. It was Rags to Rufus. We were tight.
Exactly.
But that's what's beautiful about music, though. It is the universal language.
Mm.
It's
sure.
not. It's not about who gonna get us on the one, but it is about getting on the one. And so funk is about the one, and the Beatles and that music was more. You know, it's jammy. It's
right.
more sing songy. The one was being bypassed, and so everybody needs to get on the one.
Right.
Yeah.
And not the three.
And not
just
the
one.
And not almost the three.
Yeah. Exactly.
Get on
the
one.
Period.
Yeah.
Jimena, you were saying earlier that when Shaka had gone solo, there was changes in her sound.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mishearing you, it seemed that you were also saying that when she was with Rufus, the band created a particular consistency to her output in the years that she recorded with them. And
I would say that you got me right with
yeah.
that.
So what is it that Rufus brought that helped to anchor Shaka in a particular style?
I'm not familiar with what Shaka was singing before she sang with Rufus.
I don't think she had a recording career.
Exactly.
I mean, she was playing percussion. You
exactly.
know?
Yeah. And so when you think about it like that, with a voice like hers and a voice that could sing anything, it is, it's like you could be a master of all, a jack of all trades and a master of none. Well, what if you're supposed to be a master of all, but you got to figure out how you enter the pool or you enter the arena? I think what Rufus did was it made her into our funk queen. Like we say,
sure.
She's the queen of funk. Well, if she had partnered up with any other band at that time that wasn't playing that kind of sound, she could have been a whole different artist and still would have been successful, still would have been noted and legendary, because that's just the kind of voice and talent and
yeah.
instrument that she has.
Yeah.
But with this group, I think we got to, because listen, bend me, shape me any way you want me, then you got Tell Me Something Good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's to say if Shaka was all that raunchy? Who's to say she wasn't a young singer in a room full of, you know, guys writing songs? And it's like, well, this is what the song's going to be about. Can you get that feeling? And she's like, you can't? Yeah, I can get the feeling. I can get the feeling. But I really feel like that is a precursor or like foreshadowing of where they were going. They were going. And even that song, it had a little bit more bop. It wasn't on the one, but it had a little bit more groove than a normal mainstay song
pop,
in
yeah,
the
from
60s.
That era, right.
Sure.
They were on their way. They were exploring sound. And that's what's cool about sound, because everyone is informing everyone. If you're listening at all, you could get inspired by anything. And so somewhere along the way, they got inspired by some funk. And then they found that voice. And then I think that they were all so inspired by what that sound did with that voice. Because the sound does one thing, but when it has a director that is a voice that is Shaka, yeah.
right,
with the dynamism of her person,
right.
just her
yeah,
standing there,
yeah, yeah.
right.
I feel like she got to explore, like you were saying, she was real comfortable with her power, and she found a platform for that power, that sultriness, that divine feminine energy that only she could, you know, do. But it's like, hey, who else is gonna put on some thigh-high boots and some boots, you know, in a halter top with this big old hair and this big old smile and make us love her?
Change all my picture to sweet love.
I wanted to talk a little bit about her as a singer, because you are a singer. Mm. And I wanted to ask you, what is the gift that you think Shaka has given to singers? What does she do on record that is not just, I mean, it's impressive to me, but I'm not a singer. I'm just a music fan. But what speaks to you as a singer that makes Shaka's voice and her style just so amazingly impressive?
I think for me, myself, I can't speak on what she's done for other people, because I'm not sure what resonates with them. But for me, I feel like Shaka was a piercing voice, a voice that shot through. I thought of her voice like a horn. I think of my voice as a horn. Like, I always was too loud. I used to get in trouble for being loud, you know, like, and not because I was speaking so loud, but because my voice pierces and cuts through.
Your singing and voice.
Speaking, singing, sure. Whatever. And so the voice that pierces through. And so Shaka pierced through. And then when you followed that light that you found that she was a Black Panther. You found that she was an activist. You found that she was a party girl. You found that. So you found yourself in Shaka. I think that we got a whole lot of honesty from Shaka. And as a person who strives to maintain my own transparency and authenticity in my living, let alone whatever they call this career art, you know, I'm just living, I'm breathing. And that's what you got from Shaka. You got, I'm just living and I'm breathing, I'm figuring this out. And I happen to also be able to sing and let y'all party, but I'm gonna figure me out too.
Right.
I'm not just gonna let this make me. I like that Shaka took breaks when she wanted to. I like that we didn't get music just because she had the tools. I like that Shaka got healthy again.
Yeah.
In a time when people don't get healthy again, like, the, you know, they just kind of give in to whatever the things are because the habits and the lifestyle goes hard. And so what Shaka did was, okay, we say pierce through the dark, but the sound pierced through your solar plexus to your heart. And like, for me, that's what I want to do music and art for. And so that's what Shaka did for me. It was like, yeah, just by being yourself and by being honest and just honoring whatever gifts God has given you, you can pierce through the unfeelingness all around you, within you and with the people you meet. And like, that gave me bravery, because otherwise it looks scary.
Damn.
Period.
Wow.
I was just going to follow up with what, get to that end, what was your favorite vocal of Shaka's on this album?
On this album, it's In Love We Grow.
As long as I feel this way, I'll stay with you.
Shaka sounds grown too. I don't know how young she was when this album came out, but Shaka sound like,
I think mid-20s at most.
Right.
I mean, she's still young, relatively.
Sounds grown though. Grown.
Like she done lived that.
That's
yeah.
It. We'll be back with more of our conversation with Jametta Rose on Rags to Rufus after a brief word from a couple of great Max Fun podcasts. Don't go anywhere.
Since the dawn of time, screenwriters have taken months to craft their stories. But now, three Hollywood professionals shall attempt the impossible. Break a story in 1 hour.
That's right. Here on Storybreak, I, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
the creators behind award-winning shows like Video Game High School,
have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Now, an awesome movie starts with an awesome title.
I chose The Billionaire's Marriage Valley.
Mine was Christmas Pregnant Paradise.
Okay, next we need a protagonist.
So I've heard Wario best described as Libertarian Mario.
And of course, every great movie needs a stellar pitch.
In order to get to heaven, sometimes you gotta raise a little hell.
That's the tagline!
Check out Storybreak every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleet?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
Butts.
No.
Will you change your mind?
We are back here on Heat Rocks talking about Rufus featuring Shaka Khan's 1975 album, Rags to Rufus, with our guest, Jametta Rose.
I wanted to ask you about Swing Down Chariot,
mm-hmm.
because you've got your song, Swing Down Chariot, with
right.
Sly Fifth Ave. Was that an inspiration?
No, that was, I got tapped to do that. Sly was doing his cover of Dr. Dre. He did a whole orchestrated Dr. Dre record, and that is one of the songs, and he's like, I want to have vocals for the record, would you do it? And actually when I sang it, I didn't even think about this version. They were referencing like George Clinton's version and like just, you know, Jametta, fill it out. So to sit here and like look at that, I'm like, oh yeah.
Because I thought when I was in prep for the chat, I was like, oh man, she did cover this with Sly. So I didn't know if that was because you love this album, that was a tie.
No, it wasn't a tie. It wasn't like I was like, hey Sly, I'm working on this this song and I really want to do this. No, he called me and he said he already had the instrumental arrangement of everything. He had the orchestration, you know, and he had performed it here live with no vocalist.
Oh wow.
And LA at the Echo was the debut of his like Dr. Dre orchestral performance. And so I saw that performance. It was great. And then he ended up putting out the record with True Thoughts. And on the record, he wanted to have vocals.
Yeah, man, in prep for the chat, I was like, oh, I bet you Jametta did that based on this. And actually, Shaka's decision, I'm sorry, I keep leaving Rufus out, but now that I know that he's not really real, it's no Rufus.
He's a figment.
Okay. But theirs was, they were interpolating a gospel quartet. As we know, Swing Down Sweet Chariot is a gospel song, but they were interpolating a quartet.
What did you think of that as the resident gospel? Well, actually, I guess in this room, like one of the two resident gospel experts. But how did you think they taking this gospel standard, basically spiritual, and then flipping into a funk song? What'd you think?
Loved it. Because I think sometimes when I listen to Swing Down Sweet Chariot, it can be heavy. Mm-hmm. And I like that they flipped it into something that was a little bit lighter. Mm-hmm. It didn't take away from the spiritual base of the song, but it didn't carry with it the weight that sometimes you hear something that's belonged to generations of freedom fighters and generations of slaves. And mm-hmm. it did something different for me for that song.
Swing down, chair, stop and let me ride. Rock me more, come.
Now you got me wondering if Dr. Dre heard this version and came up with Let Me Ride. I mean, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe not, but...
Could have been.
You know.
Could have been.
I think the other notable thing here is that this is the, if I'm not mistaken, it's the only song on this album that the former lead singer of Rufus, Ron Stuckert, appeals on. And because he's the other voice duetting.
Right.
And he's the one who kind of like got displaced once Shaka's star began to blaze, you know.
Shout out to Ron.
Yeah.
You had a good run.
Did he play percussion after, though? Did they keep him in?
That's a really good question. We'd have to check the credits by the time you get to, like, the Rufus featuring Shaka Khan self-titled album, which I think was, like, 2 years after this, and whether or not Ron was still around.
So, wait. So, back to what you're saying about the label. The label told the band that they were going to have to switch that around.
I could be mistaken. But I'm pretty sure that's how it went down because I don't think Rufus, the band, right? I keep talking about Rufus as if it's a person, even though I know better now. You know, Shaka Khan, she joined the group after they had already gone through, you know, different personnel changes over the course of the early 70s. But they thought of themselves like, this is our band, Rufus.
Sure.
And this, you know, this person that I guess was like a friend of the friend, wanted to audition, wants to come and play percussion. She can sing. That's cool. Like, great. Let's bring in Shaka Khan. But they weren't like, let's part the waters and like, we're going to put her up there. I'm pretty sure that was a label decision.
Right. Yeah.
And I know, I mean, just again, having read and prep for this, certainly Shaka's rise within the group created tensions with other members because they didn't think of themselves as the sideshow to her. They thought of it as the other way around. Mm-hmm. You know, to quote Marlo, you know, they thought it was one way, but it was really the other. Shout out to The Wire.
Exactly. Why they were called Rufus. I wonder if it was in an attempt to help them have more ease in crossing over.
No, originally.
From being rare breed.
Because Rufus is about breed? As black a name as
yeah,
you
Rufus
can get.
Is like,
maybe. But the original name was Ask Rufus. It was a game show name, which then they called themselves Ask Rufus. And before that, they were
like
called
Ask Reeves?
Something like that. And before that, they were called Smoke.
I've heard.
But I don't think I don't know. I don't think it's a thing. I think you're thinking of a different Smoke because I don't think they recorded under that name.
Oh.
And then they switched to Ass Rufus, and then they became Rufus, and then they became Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
Wow. Okay.
The label was like, get it together. But I think this, the fact that you're mentioning that she was a percussionist, I think they're just, we just have to do a Heat Rocks episode about fantastic vocalists who started as drummers. Because now we know Maurice White was a drummer.
She's a drummer too. Yeah. Shaka could play the whole set. She's not just a percussionist.
A drummer. And
I've seen
Karen Carpenter.
Her playing the whole set.
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins. So that has to be a whole episode on
drummers.
Singers that drum.
Yes.
And Anderson Paak.
And Anderson Paak.
There you go.
There you go.
I think we just did the episode. Boom.
We did. Yes. We just got to have some songs in there. But but yeah, thank God these people decided to come. These beautiful singers decided to come to the forefront.
Let's get into the tracks.
Yes, please.
So, Jimetta, what is your fire track off this album? The one that just lights it up for you every time.
Well, aside from the one that I mentioned,
yeah.
In Love We Grow.
Well, I mean,
that's your
reason,
jam.
That's
your
jam.
Vocal. Okay.
But, I mean, I do like You Got the Love. I like I Got the Right Street, but the wrong direction. I like that one, too. I really like the arrangements on this record. Like I was telling mm-hmm. you when I first arrived, this definitely is not my favorite Chaka stuff. I'm so happy that in looking for one song, I found another and found a whole. It was like a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I didn't know about Rufus. I didn't know. And coming here today and finding out that they had other names before, and I thought I knew those bands or at least was kind of familiar. Like, I've heard a song or two from them. And then to find out that that's Rufus and that, you know, I just love that it's always so much to learn and discover with it. But mm-hmm. for me, this record, the hotness or the heat of it was just the chemistry between the band and Chaka. Mm-hmm. And I Got the Right Street and Walking in the Sun for me are the hot tracks.
Yeah.
And even a blind man can tell when he's walking in the sun. Even a blind man can tell.
Yeah, Swing Down Chariot, I like their version. I like that you hear all the rest of the words, because even if Dr. Dre or George Clinton, for that matter, it's a gospel hymn.
Right.
So nobody was really inspired by the other in that way. Everyone was interpolating.
Sure.
So light and playful
mm-hmm.
and very different from the heaviness of You Got the Love, which opens the song. And they immediately follow this with like just a little bit of lighter fare, which I thought was just an interesting sequencing decision.
Including the background vocalists. They helped to carry that lightness with Chaka. Or was that Chaka?
I believe that might have been Chaka.
Is that all Chaka?
We should look it up. They didn't do a whole lot of overdubbing though back then. So it could have been just two girls with the voices just like her.
That used to be drummers and
it
came through.
Some sisters or cousins, because that blend was real familiar.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Backing vocals, let's see, Andre Fisher, Chaka Khan, Dennis Spellfield, Kevin Murphy, and Ron Stuckert. So, no, that is Chaka.
That's Chaka.
All Chaka. Chaka. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Chaka. Mm-hmm. She's like, I got leads and backgrounds. I got this covered. One of the sexiest songs on here to me is Smoking Room.
Mm. Yes.
Sexy, I just see.
Great sleeper jam.
Velvet, burgundy, candles.
Mm.
Okay, wait, first of all, where can I find a velvet candle? Because is it velvet and burgundy?
No. Velvet in the room.
Okay.
Burgundy, and I see the color burgundy and I see candles.
I'm with you.
But
now,
trust, if I find a velvet candle.
Etsy.
That won't burn. That's why I was like, what's going on? Let me know.
Oh, man.
Used to be locked in a closet, and I couldn't find the key. Used to be look my way, but now
I'm surprised. Well, maybe I'm not surprised, just knowing the room here. No one mentioned the big hit off of here, which is Tell Me Something Good, which maybe that is not anyone's favorite. It wasn't my favorite, even though I love the song quite a bit. It's just worth noting, and I don't think I realized this until, you know, prepping for the show, is that, you know, this was a song that Stevie Wonder wrote for Chaka Khan.
Sure.
Like, he could have kept it in his repertoire. Like, he was minting crazy hits in the mid-70s, of course. This is like Songs in the Key of Life era, Intervisions, and all that.
Sure.
But Steve is like, you know what? I'm just going to give this one away. Chaka, how about you? You're this up-and-coming percussionist with this funk group. Like,
with the ill voice.
Let's have you try this on. So I've been re-listening to this song because I certainly was familiar with Tell Me Something Good, but I've been re-listening, trying to imagine Stevie singing it. And I'm almost there where I can kind of hear it, especially in the hook. But to me, this is such like a Chaka Khan song. Mm-hmm. It's just impossible to imagine in anybody else's voice.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you like it, yeah. Got no time.
I totally can hear Stevie, though.
On the, yeah, something about the tell me something.
No,
I could just imagine that.
God, yes, that's Stevie.
Yes, true.
It's Stevie,
true,
but
true.
It's just like he knew that it was her too. He could hear her voice, and he could hear how it was. She had that that thing. He
yeah.
could do
yes,
that too.
Yes.
But he knew she could do it, and so like I could hear that.
So funky.
I think I knew that.
They needed more clavinet on
here. Because it's a song, Prince wrote a song for Chaka later. And we know Chaka version and Prince version is better. Not better, but you know, Prince's version is the original. Wait.
Not I Feel For You.
Isn't that the Prince song?
Uh-huh, that's Prince. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So Prince's version is like, even though, so like, I imagine that the demo for this is similar to that. Like, you know, it's like, great, but it's like she needed to sing. We needed to hear her sing it. She had that voice. But Feel For You, come on now.
But her version was 80s and it sounds 80s. Her version of I Feel For You, it had all that Chaka Khan. It had all that stuff. I mean, that was my jam at the moment, but looking back, I'm like, nothing is more 80s than all the synth that is rapping this.
And Milli Mel, of course. Right.
But Prince's version, can we hear Prince's version? Is
yes.
that cool?
Yeah.
Satisfied. Wouldn't lie to you, baby. It's mainly a physical thing. This feeling that I get for you, baby. It makes me want to sing.
I can't choose between them. I really can't. Because I hear you in terms of, you know, it's hard to outdo Prince, really.
Yeah.
I mean, on anything. But, like, Chaka's version of this song is just so fire. And maybe it's because it was my introduction.
Is strong,
it is.
Prince's is subtle.
Yeah.
And I think that it's funny because, like, he's the man and she's the woman, but a man saying he feels for you.
So vulnerable.
Is vulnerable.
Right.
And a woman saying she feels for you is vulnerable in a different way. You might not say it back. So she's saying, I feel for you and you going to love me. You know
right.
what I'm saying? So, like, I love it.
And it's big and it's got all that stuff behind it.
Yeah.
And also really a part of her comeback because Chaka had been, you know, this was the thing that brought her back. And shout out to Prince for giving away, you know, that song and it being the thing that, but he did that with a lot of people. I mean, he did that for Sinead with Nothing Compares For You.
Yeah.
He did that with the Bangles with Manic Monday. He just kept doing it. So, but if I had to pick, Prince's version is my favorite.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
Well, speaking of other songwriters that wrote for Chaka, you know, for, I don't know if this is my fire track, but it's definitely, I think it qualifies as my favorite sleeper jam, which is Ain't Nothing But a Maybe,
ooh,
written by Ashford and Simpson.
Ooh.
Could it be he's interested? Or should I let the moment go and forget this hunger inside?
And if you listen to enough Valerie Simpson from this era, like, you recognize the arrangement, the style of it is very much like in her lane. And yeah, that's part of what I love about this is like, I can hear the writers behind it,
yeah.
But being interpreted through a different band, a different singer.
And they must have had a thing for double negatives because they also wrote Ain't No Mountain High Enough and Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing.
They really like the ain't.
So they really were in the double negatives.
They wanted us to know that slang is where it's at.
That's right.
You know, ain't nothing but a maybe. Ain't nothing but a hound dog. No, I'm just
ain't nothing but a G thing. Not them. Not them. That we know of. That we
but
know
I,
of.
My thing is if it's ain't nothing, because ain't already implies nothing. So if you, because you know in math, does that mean that it's something there?
Okay.
It's a positive. You know, it is a maybe.
It's a positive. It is a maybe. Is that really where we're going?
Friends of the show know that math has never really been my thing. So if this, if we're going to get into a math situation, I got to tap out.
You like, I'm not doing
it. I'm not it. But I do know that Ashford and Simpson, you know, had a thing for the ain't nothing mm-hmm. done the ain't.
I never even thought about that, but you're right. Yeah. They really.
That was their thing.
They were the queen and king of the ain't.
They were.
Go on ahead.
Shout
somebody
out to shout out to Ashford and Simpson. Let's talk about Sideways. Okay. Shortest track on here. And I think we've said on other shows, why don't people talk more in tracks? Just start talking. If you're not going to play the voicemail messages, just have something to say at the beginning of the track.
I think this might be.
I like talking on tracks.
Okay.
Perhaps too much. It sound like we just walked in on a rehearsal. Okay?
Right. Yeah, this is not a monologue. This is just someone left the mic on and the tape was rolling. And they're like, well, we need to fill out the album.
Let's I was
just
like, that sound good. You should laugh again.
And I'm sure the label was like, who decided to put that on there? And everyone was like, Rufus.
Sue him.
Yeah. that was a crazy track. It's less than 2 minutes long, but I just love the fact that it's, to me, it's a band flex and it's Shaka just being like, whatever. Coming to rehearsal, it's all good.
It sounded like a door opened and you walked into rehearsal.
Right.
Yes.
You know, and that's why I think even though it was like random, it was short, it was a moment of feeling at least the camaraderie. Because like being a person that has sung in other people's bands and has my own band, and now with this choir, it's so much, so many jokes, so many like little nuances that can never get captured. And then you just press record, which I often do because I got to go back and reference.
Sure.
You press record and then you have that kind of moment. But I like that it sounded like it started small, like you were outside the door.
Sure.
And then you walked in and Rags to Rufus is like, we broke. We out here making this money. We going to make this music
sure.
regardless. And so you're walking in on a group that somebody might have came from work earlier. Somebody might have came from here. And then they coming together and they like writing, rehearsing, recording and tired, but still up. Still
right,
up, you
right.
know. It's like you felt all of that. And I like that because I feel like that is why they included it in this. Because like you said, they thought of themselves as a band.
Yeah, of course.
Not
yeah.
as the backing band for
right.
Shaka.
Sure. Right.
So this was a glimpse into them, you know. But I think it's funny that out of that glimpse into them, what we heard was Shaka talking. What we heard was Shaka laughing.
Still running still, things.
Yeah.
Jimena, you had mentioned earlier that the song that you had originally gone hunting and accidentally found this album through, which is You Know I Live You, which is from, I think, the early 80s by Shaka Khan. You said you had covered that with your band.
I did.
Have you ever covered a song off of this album? And if not, or if so, what song? And if not, if you had to choose a song to cover, mm-hmm. which one would you want to
Good
pick
question.
On?
Good question.
I've only covered that one yeah. Shaka Khan song mm-hmm. By choice. Yeah. I've sung at some weddings, you know what I'm saying? But
right,
with
right.
my own my yeah. own creative juice,
right.
I Know You, I Live You, I feel that song in my heart still,
yeah.
like, you know.
Yeah.
With this record, I think that if I was to cover a song from this record, I wouldn't pick my favorite song, even though it's my favorite song
yeah. In Love We
for
Grow.
A reason, In Love We Grow. I wouldn't pick that one just because I'm trying not to be predictable, for one. And for two, it's just I couldn't think of myself singing that necessarily at a a club setting, which is usually where I sing. If I had an control of where I sang, I'd sing it at like a museum or a concert hall, that kind of song. But I think that I would choose to cover, I'm trying to choose between Ain't Nothing But a Maybe and Looking Through My Eyes, which only I just like the arrangements.
Yeah.
And I would try to do those songs justice. But yeah, like, if I was going to cover something from the record, I guess I would have. But that was a good choice. I mean, good question, because I never thought of covering anything from this record.
You could do Rags to Rufus.
And just never come in. I'm just like, you guys, this is where I breathe and act like I'm Chaka Khan. Everyone be quiet and the band's going to, no.
Your choir could do a vocalese version of it, you know. There you go.
Wait a minute. Now you are on to something.
Or you could or you guys could do Swing Down Chariot. You could do it a little bit more up-tempo.
Well, the fun choir. Thing is the choir has a cover of Cosmic Slop.
There you go.
If you had to describe the album in three words, what would they be?
In three words, I would say necessary. Necessary because people need to hear this music. And like I was saying about the thread being found, we need to find the threads. And for me, this was a necessary thread to find Rufus, to find. And so I would say necessary, soulful, and universal, because the band was multi-ethnic. And I think that that's what I love about music from the 70s and just music in general. Like, when you see music in these concert halls, everywhere we go, it's never just one nationality playing, you know. And the thing is, like, music is a language of its own. And, like, I don't know how to read music, right? But I speak human very well. And that's what comes out in the singing, in the relating to people. And so I'm so happy that I speak human well and that I happen to be singing, because singing is the universal language. And I do speak human well. And so it's just, like, an honor to be able to play with so many people, to be able to reach people through barriers. And right now we live in a time where barriers are everywhere. And so when I say music is necessary, like, this album and all the art that we get to witness is necessary. You know, it helps us to remember we're human and to continue speaking the language of humanity.
Spend some time. I'm glad I got you, baby. So glad I got you. Spend some time.
That's going to do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Jametta Rose, talking to us about Rags to Rufus. Where can people find you, and what are you working on these days?
Well, thanks for having me, too. And I can be found online, JamettaRose.com. You spell my name J-I-M-E-T-T-A. I'm named after my father. So Jim, Etta, like James. So Jim Etta Rose.
Nice.
And Voices of Creation is coming this summer. And I'm finally going to be also doing more solo shows. So August 14th at the Broad Museum, as a part of the conclusion to the Soul of a Nation jazz series for the summer, I'll be presenting the choir there, as well as a solo set. So I'm excited.
Very cool. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles, where you can find the right street, but often the wrong direction. We want to thank all of our 5-star iTunes reviewers. The latest includes Love Stacks, who wrote to tell us, quote, "I'm a 62-year-old Italian who loves your show," unquote. We love that our appeal is cross-generational. And we had Nato Matt praising Morgan and I for having, quote, "two of the smoothest voices in podcasting," unquote. Thank you to Matt. If you dear listener, have not had a chance yet, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. It is a key way in which new listeners can find their way to our little show.
We also wanted to thank all of our social media fans and family out there, including the following folks, and there have been so many. We want to shout out Clive Gardner, who loved our print episode, our tribute episode, when we celebrated the Purple Rain's 35th anniversary and we went back. Thank you so much. We want to shout out Sarah M. Bannon for putting people onto the podcast. We want to shout out Paul Jammies, at Paul James Jr. We want to shout out Heaven Spawn. Thank you. Thank you, Heaven Spawn. We want to shout out Kevin Smokler, as always, holding us down. Star Anise, who really enjoyed Oliver's sampling episode. We want to shout out Tamala Hutcherson, who always holds us down but gave me some heat about my Prince commentary. Sorry about that, home team. We also want to shout out Patrick Miller, Brittany Murphy, Jacoby81 for always holding us down. Gosh, there was so much love. We want to shout out Warmer Disco, who always holds us down. Chef Mlu, Jordan Calling, my Lord, Kevin Zapp, DJ Swan. We want to shout out Paul Gottlieb, holding us down again, Lene Cook, Marina B, Catherine Murray, and also Kier Lehman himself, who gave us some love for being on the show. We also want to shout out the real Sean John, who says, as someone who found himself at many Chinese Student Association dances in college in the 80s, he really appreciated the discussion on the Asian American connection to Depeche Mode,
yes,
Erasure, and New Order in the episode with Oliver. And also, finally, we want to thank Netta McBoulay for her love. We do so appreciate the tweezies and the retweezies. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan. One last thing. Here is a teaser for next week's episode, which is a rerun of our summer special. This is in honor of the first week of August, which marks the high point of the summer season, and we're going to rerun last year's episode featuring Quetzal, with me, Morgan, and Quetzal talking about our favorite examples of summer tunes. Mm. What associations do each of you have between music and summer?
For me, summertime has changed over time.
Yeah.
Right, the meaning of summer. But I think that early on in my life, it was about having a whole lot of time on your hands to watch television, or, you know, being on the bus, going to work, back and forth, all that stuff. So I think that music kind of gave you that extra company you needed in those long days.
You said that summer's changed, though. So what is it now, if that's how it used to be?
I feel like I don't have the kinds of summers that I remember as a kid. I think they tend to be just as busy.
Yeah.
So I think that music changes has for that reason. I think that summer music, I think about albums in the year rather than summer times.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that the concept of this show isn't cool and interesting.
You need to leave.
But I think that, you know, as a kid, summer and music, I feel like coincide, you know, just sort of makes sense more than as an adult for me.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.